requires that when you transfer functions, before the transfer takes place, there must be discussions between yourself and FOC. And when we met at FOC last year, they indicated that they are hearing that you are in the process of transferring their function without having any discussion with them. And that might have been resolved, because in the view it was illegal what you're doing, because they said that the law says you must consult them first. It's not that you transfer the function then you go back to them. You consult with them, and then after then you can then start the process of transfer. But when we met late last year, you were already at an advanced stage of transferring without having engaged FOC or have any discussion with them at all. We were just hearing this thing in the corridors. And then on the number of hospitals constructed or revitalized, can you match this number with what is in this document? On page, what's the page number? What is in this document and what you have written on page 28? Because you're saying there are 8 mega infrastructure projects that are currently being implemented by both national and provincial. But here you have written 2, 15, 16. It's 2 that you are implementing. But here you're saying that are currently under construction, which are out there on the ground running. There are 8. But in the ACT this year, you talk about 35 and about 2. You talk about 85 in the document. You say 50 projects are currently running, which is maybe not sure whether they fall under your clinics and your community health centers, so that at least one is able to relate what is written here in this document and what is in the plan itself. The other matter that they raised earlier on Salesforce, which I said was not responded to, was that 1.4 billion cut. 1.4 billion that cabinet approved that it must be reduced. Conditional grants allocation to province. Its impact thereof, and what was the reason for cabinet to take such a decision to reduce the allocation to provinces by 1.4 billion. The issue of EMS, I'm not sure whether it is your plans does understand the biggest problems on the ground. There's big problems of EMS on the ground. Serious changes. Especially in rural provinces. The system is not working. The system is not working. And as a result, people are dying because of that. You know? But you are then saying, no, this year, the whole year you'll be doing gazetting. I thought gazetting is a very short process. Because you're saying EMS regulation and compliance circle is gazetted. No. So the whole year you'll be just doing gazetting. Then you'll start implementing next financial year in 3 provinces. The other financial year in 3 provinces. Just like that. And even the first financial year, you have chosen provinces that are more urban, as opposed to dominant that are more urban, as opposed to those that are rural in nature, where there's a serious problem and serious crisis of EMS responses and the way they operate and all those things and communication, there are systems there. It's not working, the system. So I know it's managed at the provincial level, but as you're saying, you want to put the regulations and guidance and standards on how this must be done. It's critical that we just give the priority that it deserves, because it's a dire situation on the ground. Thanks.
Thank you. So on primary health care, on the issue of port health, Jefferson, I have a serious concern regarding the clinic in OR Tambo. I was sharing with you, Chair, that on last week I was suspecting I had a headache, and I was suspecting that maybe my BP is high, and I went to the clinic at the airport, and only to find that they tested my BP. It was high, it was 173 over 102, and they had no treatment. And, you know, I'm asking myself that if a clinic at the airport, a big airport like OR Tambo, has got no treatment for chronic disease, for emergency cases, even panology, why? Why are we having a situation like that? That means people can die. You know, I had to go there. They had to call a rape. Which is a private clinic, for me to get a prescription, which I had to pay 271 to get that prescription, so that I can be able to go at the chemist at the airport to still pay for the treatment, which to me it doesn't make sense. I'm not sure why we have a clinic, whereas that clinic cannot provide treatment. That the clinic is meant for testing only. All what they told me is that they are just dealing with AMA vaccines, you know, and I'm not sure about chronic medication for emergency cases. I was thinking that maybe this 118 million is meant for treatment, but maybe we can get the certification from the department. With regards to HIV and AIDS care, I think the department is underspending here. They've used almost 50%, not even 3/4 of their budget in the program. And I'm not sure in this financial year if they can convince us that they'll be able to spend the budget that they have allocated. And if yes, they can convince us that they are going to be able to spend their budget share, can they be able to tell us what systems they have put in place to address this understanding share? Because I think this is most critical for us. The under allocation share of primary health care, I'm sure I agree with Honorable Masalena. That really is a concern for us as the Portfolio Committee.
Thank you, Honorable Members. Honorable Masalena.
I just forgot two things. The issue of, The issue of condom distribution in big numbers. Do we have a situation where we evaluate or make an assessment in terms of impact? Because distribution is another matter. And we're distributing it for a particular purpose. We're not just distributing for compliance to say South Africa is distributing a lot of condoms. But was distributing the condoms for a particular purpose? Is it, are we realizing the objectives that we are distributing the condoms for? And if so, how do you arrive at that? Do we have a system that we use continuously to assess the impact to which this distribution has? And therefore, we can proudly say it's not a system is lacking. And then the second question, sir, it's around the issue that is the present raised, the State of the Nation address around the issue of focusing on TB around mining towns and workers and communities, as well as the correctional facilities. So just to get an understanding, looking at the budget that you've allocated, will you be able, with the budget that you've allocated, to effectively implement this new indicator? And then second, what role is the stakeholders, especially the mining bosses or the mining community or the mining owners, are playing in this whole exercise? Are you working with them for funding purposes? Or is just the department alone? And how do you work with the Correctional Services Department as well in relation to the implementation of this? Malnutrition. Is there in the plan, but I haven't said what is the strategy to deal with the problem? Because you've alluded to it to be the problem. What strategy in practical terms are we doing, and how do we relate to the Department of Social Development, the Department of Education, in relation to this work? You have, for example, the issue in most of quintiles, what quintile 1 and 2, and who know free schools and all the things, a program of nutrition. But when you go there, the food, in most of these areas, they aren't nutritious food. How are you working to make sure that the food that is being provided to the kids are food that are, to play a role, or it's just a matter of education, then you are not part of it. And therefore, as a result, they determine what type of food they must eat. Without you as experts to and advise, in terms of what needs to be the menu. The school health as well, how do you, because I hear you only talk about in the plan about your grade 1, does it, how do you relate to EC centers, all the public advisors, as part of the issues to make sure that we deal with the challenges that children are having at as early as possible, so that we don't only catch them when they're in grade 1, but we should start somewhere at these ECT centers and all those things. Is there any relationship or joint program together with social development? Because from 0 to 4, it's social development, then education starts from 5, where is grade R and then grade 1 and all those things. Is there any collaborations in that respect? Sorry, sir.
If you go ahead, we'll suggest that you would come. Thanks, sir. Chair, I just want to ask the department how you are going to address the issue of
sorry, can you the mic please?
Yeah. how are you going to address the issue of teenage pregnancy? Because we have a huge rise of HIV infection from the 15 to 24 year age group. Because there's also alcohol and drug use. How do we, the two somehow link up together? And we are very silent on that, on alcohol and drug abuse, which really leads to a number of the type of diseases, like your surgical injuries, or injuries to the child and all that, and treatment incidents. So what's your status then about the colleagues?
I just want to suggest before I ask the question, maybe you must reconsider on how you structure the report, so that it enables members to ask questions in relation to our mechanism. But you did say that on this for the project of in terms of HIV and AIDS 15 to 24, whatever. If you have a program, plus where are you piloting it? What has been the result? And what is it that you think? Where are the witnesses? Which provinces are? I'm just making an example, because you may have picked up that some of the members are asking questions on issues that you have reflected on them, but you have reflected on them generally. That is my reflection. This is why I'm saying, maybe as the department, you have, as we are asking questions, begin to sit down and say, how best do you? I'm not implying that your report is not friendly, reader friendly, but the problem is there are issues that you drop them generally, and then they then need us to be more positive, want to ask questions, whereas if you then they become pregnant, so that we are able, as we'll be playing our own side, we are able to really know why things are not happening. Again, it's a general question. You say you've got a program on both 3, 4, and 5. But you are still saying in 2017, kukhona kuzawuthi kumiselwe into yesikolishi. Just simplifying it. On something that has been talked about as early as 2012, what is it that is making it difficult to have a pilot of a college? I'm raising this because the shortage of health, of nurses, I'm still going to come to the general package of health workers. The shortage of nursing is scary. I went to Durangenza. No, I went to Livingston. I couldn't believe the environment and the stress that nurses are. I am not implying that there are no people that are not doing what they're saying, but it can be. And there are a number of nurses that are not employed. Maybe that is we have to ask that in provinces. But how then do you actually, the incident of the Rangins, for an example, that was on cutting edge. Obviously, it's a person that was trained in a university, that whole story there, I'm not going to go into it. But is it not an incident that is to push you as a department more on the issue of excite nursing? Because tomorrow, in fact, outside nurses have been seen as people that they don't care. Whereas, for crying out loud, they are working. I have been out of the system since 2005. it was worse then, but it's worse than then now. Maybe it depends on. So I'm pleading that to you, DJ, that this thing of nursing, bedside nursing, well, is it late by the Department of Higher Education and Training? Tell us so that we call them, we want them to understand why that is the situation. Again, in the reporting, which has always been my concern, when we talk about health, there are only two categories that are being talked about, Dr. Kat, as the one is dealing with HR. And health institutions, health system is not made out of DDGs, doctors, nurses, pathologists. And I said last time I would have thought that in terms of the administration, in any, we know for a fact that in any health institution, there are categories that can make and break a health institution. And everywhere, that has been my observation, even provinces, the issues of general assistance, which falls under the broader administration, which also talks about cats, about cats and potters. Those people, when they come in, when come into a hospital, even in a private hospital. But in terms of the Department of Health, I don't know whether you leave that to provinces. Because we'll never improve. And we are raising these questions because majority of us in this committee has been in the Conference of Health. And I always say, if you have ever been in the Conference of Health institution, you will always think that a person who is raising some of these things is a bit petty. That is why my emphasis is that teaching. Whether we like it or not, we must accept and acknowledge that there are categories in the health system that are to make and break any health institution. Any. Because if there's no general system, when someone comes in, this clinic is filthy. If people are going to stand there for hours, there's no water, there's no cup to take. So I'm hammering on this so that as you are looking into the workforce, the human resource of health, please lead it with demonstrate change. There is, and I'm trying to get into that, I'm going to get it and give it to you. There was an audit that was made in Durang, in PE at Durang in Livingston, by a firm called Ben and Fleming. It is when the system of health changed to the west out of that. Out of when those auditors went there. I went to the director's office in PE because I want those. Because when we are to ensure that we do things differently and we change, we re-engineer primary health, there are things that really we are to look into and say, didn't we, were we not being confused by this? Or at that time there was a need, but now things have changed. Having said that, in page 94 of the APP, we haven't spoken about this, I don't know why, and when I read this, I was under the impression that the expectation that you talk about that in reading the summarized version, which is public-private partnership, which is on page 94 of the APP. I would have thought that you relate to that, you talk about that when you're talking about vaccinations and whatever, because that paragraph talking about that, how far are you, what is it that you are doing, that argument hasn't been, whatever that is in that paragraph, which I do, and if I'm a bit confused about that in relation to the issue of the vaccination, you will correct me. The last point is that I think Honourable Mashelela has touched on the group, because my question, I was going to ask it differently. Do you have a program? Because the department of government departments are working in silos big time. And as long as working in silos is not corrected, we are going to be in this mess. Now, I'm going to the environment. You are saying There are municipalities here that are complying with the norms and standards. I go, this is the answer. Because I know for a fact that two metros in the Eastern Cape, in terms of the environment and the cleanliness of the municipality, it is the urban side which is clean. But in our location, it is filthy. Same applies with Buffalo City. I'm not quite sure with culture, but I always make an example about Soweto. Soweto is one of the cleanest locations in the country, a certain portion, yes. But if you say some of the different hygiene, but we complain in our provinces every time that our locations are filthy. During the program, if you don't, I think it's going to be important that when you come back, we must be told. After the quarter from now, we must be told what is it. If they are resisting, because their resistance affects your program and affects everything that you want to do, because a place is a health hazard. Some of the issues have been raised by members, but for me, it was more on those comments that are quite... I'm not implying that there's no work that you are doing in terms of human resource and training. But yes, you can train a CEO, but a CEO is not going to clean a floor. What is it that is making it difficult for this government, in terms of the Department of Health, to employ general assistants, clerks, and porters in our institutions right across?
Thank you, Shelina. Should I start? Yes, thank you, Chair. Let me start with the last question, Chair, that you've raised about the employment of general assistants. And I just want to mention that in 2009-10, Chair, the Minister commissioned work, integrated support program, to look at staffing in the health sector. And finding, Chair, were quite disturbing, because it shows that over a period, we actually increased the intake in our facility with general assistance significantly. The doctors, increase in the employment of doctors, Chair, over that period, increased by 2%, by 1.8%, and nurses by 2%. So the minister can show you in that report that we had, I think, was it a 300% increase? Oh, I can't remember the figure, but it was just massive. And the balance was such that we had more administrators in health, both in the provincial office, national, even in the facilities, than we had health workers. And if you translate that to budgets, you'll see that it has consumed a significant proportion of the budget. We can actually show you the numbers. That's the first problem, Chair. The second, we did an analysis of the budget, and Chair, because you've been a health worker and a nurse, you'll know that historically, you had a ratio of professional nurse and enrolled nurses. At the moment, for some facilities, you've got more professional nurses than you have enrolled nurses. So the ratio is huge, and we're trying to correct that in that we say we probably need more enrolled nurses and nursing assistants in our facilities than we do professional nurses. Even the data now, we as part of this exercise on WISEN, we'll show you, we're saying in a clinic, you need so many professional nurses, so many enrolled nurses, you need a cleaner, you need a security. So we can show you, we've done a breakdown. We even, this is a, what is done, Chair, we can give you in detail. For we even tell you that for a clinic of the science, you need an operational manager, a professor, because at the moment, the problem is that your nurse is both a manager and a nurse. We say, decide that a nurse is a manager, because she can't on one hand run a clinic and 2 minutes she has to look at the patient. We said, it cannot be. You must have what we call an operational manager in a clinic,
have a professional nurse, enrolled nurses, the ratio, we say correct it, it must be 7 enrolled nurses to 4. Now, if you look at the moment, it's actually skewed. You must have a cleaner, a lay counselor, an admin clerk, data caterer, even right there, you must have a groundsman, a security, pharmacy assistant, dental therapist, dental assistant. So we've actually categorized it. But we've gone further. We said, if you have this size of a clinic, if it's small, these are the numbers. If it's medium, these are the numbers. If it's large, these are the numbers. So we've even done that. So we've gone back to provinces to say, please ensure that you implement this, because we want this to be implemented in terms of the act. So this ideal clinic concept is to say that when you seek ideal, you must be complying with this normative work. We're doing the same also for hospitals. I'm just saying, we're not just saying you need nurses. It has become running in a sense that we said so many professionals, because sometimes when you say nurses, we don't say what the ratio is between professional and enrolled. Because you see more, and our institutions are training more professional nurses. So it means we've got more chiefs in our facilities. You see, we need both chiefs and soldiers to do the work. So Chair, I needed to just confirm, we're correcting those numbers that the minister has been worried about. The next chair, and I wish for each question I could answer in this way, but due to lack of time, I won't be able to. And I apologize for it, Chair. The first question about HIV/AIDS burden. Chair, remember HSRC released the report and said we're doing well on incidence, we're doing well on prevalence. So prevalence is going up because we're putting more people on treatment. But your measure of success is whether we see new infection rates. And you're saying the concern is this age group. And our interventions are, we link that to, do people have education about HIV? So our assumption is that this group must be educated more about prevention measures. But in case that there was a study, if you may recall, in this study they were showing intergenerational relationships. And our assumption is that the intergenerational relationships are also a problem, where you have older men having relationships with younger girls. And that is the problem we have to solve as a country. It's not just a health issue. It's a social issue of us teaching our young girls what type of relationships that we have. And that report is there. So our planning, pardon? The other way. The older men, yes, I agree, Honorable Member. In fact, we must teach the whole of society. And yes, but they are not at risk yet from the picture. Honorable Chair, I think the risk that we see, maybe let me explain, the risk that we see, the intergenerational relationships that we see of older men and younger girls, the risk is that if these young girls are infected, they are going to have relationships with younger boys. That is the risk, and this is the potential threat that we see. And the education, of course, is for, I don't know whether we can instruct them that have relationships with people your age.
Sorry for this. What I'm finding it very good again is that we are not talking about older women that have got relationship with younger men. Is that not a, or is that the safe area, the more dangerous area is older men? If you can.
For now, I'm talking about HIV/AIDS infection and new infection rates. That is the data that we see. To say it's the increase is among 15 to 24-year-olds. That's the group, and we say that what are the potential risk areas. I mean, we don't have data that shows that older women are infecting younger men. We don't have that. We don't know. And not that we're encouraging those relationships, Chair. We are not. Yes, Chair. The next one about, and I was trying to respond to this effective intervention that Honorable James raised. The next one, Chair, is about the hospitals and the CEO. Dr. Carter will respond to that because he's been driving the program and being a former CEO himself of the
Cyril, he's more hands-on and he understood the issues better. Honorable Masalela, about the AG and the past financial performance and the data, I think Ms. Rolmaran should respond about how we dealt with the data problems and how this is being addressed. On PAC and the FFC report, Ms. Hunter will respond on how we went about the port health services and how we're addressing this. Provinces and compliance with the norms. Can I just say, can be specific with regard to emergency medical services? At the moment, the emergency medical services are the competence of municipalities. And perhaps what I was trying to highlight is that that on its own is a problem. Because municipalities work within boundaries. And we are saying it's a wrong model. So we are changing, and we are saying that function, emergency medical services must fall under a province so that they can be able to move ambulances as and when needed to any part of the country. This is our solution, Honourable Member, and I'm hoping that is able to. Now, those regulations are ready. We actually had a consultation process with the provinces, the NFC. The level of readiness differs from province to province. KZN is already ahead. They don't have a problem. They can implement that. In fact, they already set up in an information system. We ask that maybe KZN can help other provinces have the same information system. It's even better than the recent case. It's actually state of the art. It's brilliant. But Chair, what KZN is struggling with at the moment, the AMS staff are on strike because they want a danger allowance, OSD. I'm just saying they are all the other, but they've got nothing to do with the model. The KZN model, in my opinion, is the best. And what these regulations are doing are to get every province to do the same. But there's a step before implementation. We need municipalities to agree to forego their function. And we're hoping there's not going to be a struggle between local government and provinces, you know, in relation to those functions. But if we continue with the functions as they are, the problems that Honorable Mashalela raised will continue and they will persist because the structure is inappropriate. The next chair about MAConnect, I agree actually, Honorable Member, that perhaps it's an oversight just to look at this intervention in the antenatal phase, and we should extend this beyond to include the postnatal related interventions and support, because women must still visit the facility postnatally, and we can still ensure that children are immunized. Maybe you can tell us how best we're doing it. The next chair on FFC, in fact, I have read the FFC report about primary health care, but Honorable Members, what FFC also said, they ran a workshop and said we need to decentralize budgets beyond the provinces, further down to the districts. And in the workshop that they ran yesterday, they were actually proposing that we do that. And we've attempted to do that, Chair, in the manner in which we are proposing how the NHI district should be run in future. But there seems to be a disagreement between ourselves and Treasury. Treasury is not of the view that, in fact, if you decentralize money up to district level, your service arrangement will improve because it's closer to where people seek services. If you centralize it, it's not proper. You can't keep it nationally with us. Neither can you keep it with provinces. We are of the view that there should be decentralization. But the argument is that we do not have enough capacity. And I'm of the view that we need to build that capacity. We need to start building those district health authorities and get them to run the services. And it's the basis on which services will improve. We can't build a system around the fact that there's no capacity. If there isn't any, we build it. And this is where we are. The next one about the Honorable Ndaba, I must apologize for the podcast and to your experience, but Ms. Hunter will explain. We just took over. I don't know when you went there, but we took over this function the 1st of April. So it's a new function. So we're still trying to build those services. One is that there has been travel screening for people who are leaving the country for yellow fever, but also for coming in, for screening people. If you come from places where there are Ebola, yellow fever, they are the people who must fix it up. But we have to assess whether we want to expand the service beyond what they are. May have some emergency services. And Ms. Hunter can respond to that. The HIV AIDS understanding, so this past financially, I just checked, Honorable Member, as at February, our expenditure was 84%, and the indicative figures for now, we think we'll reach 99.8%. So my suspicion is that at the time, maybe the report was for the midterm, but for now the implementation is actually, in fact, at the end of February, it was 94%. Dr. Mashalel again raised the condom distribution. Eh? This one is a difficult one. I'll tell you why it's a difficult one. One, there are two problems. We've had reports about misuse of condoms. Misuse of condoms by students. They wear long socks and they tie the socks with the condoms. And then we also had the second one about the elderly women who use drugs, their feet for arthritis, and they say arthritis go away. So we are aware of those abuses. In that, it sometimes gives the false impression that we buy condoms for them to be used for one purpose and they are used for something else. The biggest problem, and I really there's a problem, is all humility. It's very difficult. I mean, even if people take the condoms, we don't know if they are going to use them. It's a very difficult measure. Unless it's basically saying we get into people's bedrooms. It's difficult. 8 years. But you finally, it's a very difficult measure. I still don't know how we'll measure that. It's just appealing and educating people. It's a measure that is difficult, and I'm being honest in that. But for things that people have taken, whether you've taken a pill for contraception or whatever, you are either pregnant or you're not. We know it will happen, it will show. Condom is difficult. You can only assume that it has been used. If there's a way of calculating those that end up elsewhere, in garbage or in... If there was a way, it's difficult. You can't. I'm sorry, I apologize for that. But we'll try and find a measure. Maybe Dr. Non-Transamine will help. In fact, the keep in the mind is one area that is where we're making progress together with the correctional services. For correctional services, we've already, I think, tested a lot of inmates. The figure I got yesterday was at Sanak. Is it 57,000? No, 87,000 inmates have been tested for TB. And the point now is, after they are tested, how many of them have TB and how many are put on treatment. And the minister met with the mining bosses, honorable members, before the World TB Day. And precisely because he wants them to commit, and it's not just a ministerial initiative, there's actually a presidential program that where we actually are expected to report what are we doing in the mines. We report through that program and also through the office of the Deputy President. So there's standing reports that we can share with you. They are actually prepared by Dr. Isnasami. For correctional services, the next step, honorable members, is that beyond just TB, the primary health care team is working with the Department of Correctional Services. We're setting up a team on what other services are needed by the inmates beyond just TB and HIV, because some are tested and they don't get ARVs on time, so we'd like to address that as well. On malnutrition and relationship with social development, Dr. Jamin will respond, and teenage pregnancy, Dr. Jamin will also respond. She's actually directly involved with those programs. The one on nursing colleges, Dr. Carter will say that's where we are. We may reflect our tires, but I think there's a bit of progress, and Madam Chair, we're working with the colleges and the universities. Actually, there's a formal structure that the nursing officer is responsible for. Chair, the Doran Ginza story. I think we need to understand more what those issues are. And I agree, sometimes if you check the way we get consultants, they recommend, you implement, things don't work, people don't admit, and so on. So we, this exercise, we're trying to avoid exactly that. That is not about consultants. And I was using Gauteng as an example because we want to use the Gauteng experience for other provinces to learn. Use KZN experience on EMS for other provinces. What we're doing these days, we're using provinces to learn from each other. If one province succeeds, we get others to go and learn for that one. That's how it's going, and the MECs are driving that process, which is quite encouraging. And finally, on the public-private partnership, so we used to be on the board of BioVac as a partner, and the WHO raised this as a conflict of interest. They say we are risky and a player. And they were raising this specifically because we were approached by the World Health Organization to also be the main supplier of vaccines for the UN system. And they said we can't be reference supply. So we have withdrawn that function, and it is now going to be the Department of Science and Technology that takes over from us. And we will be the buyer only, but will not be the seller. So this is what we had to address. I will then allow Dr. Sami to...
Before she does that, this load shedding has affected the kitchens, thing one. Our lunch is going to be cold, but two, remember that when there is load shedding, some of the staff, they are allowed to go home because they are not going to be doing anything. So I am assuming that lunch is ready, but it is cold. But I was also told that they are saying they are going to wait until we are done. Maybe at that time, electricity will be back. So I just wanted to... members understand the situation of where we are.
Thank you, Didi. I will start with Mom Connect. Mom Connect, actually, the messages do go beyond delivery. The mother continues to receive messages after she has delivered. She's reminded about the 6-week checkup, for instance. And then because these messages are stage-based, when her baby turns 6 weeks, she'll also get a message that her baby is due for immunization now. When the baby is 10 weeks, the next immunization, and so on. And also received messages on exclusive breastfeeding, and then messages when the baby turns 6 months on now it's time to introduce complementary feed, and so on. On the question of teenage pregnancies, I'll address teenage pregnancies together with HIV and AIDS, because the interventions that you put in place to prevent teenage pregnancy actually go hand in hand with interventions that also reduce teenage pregnancy. One of the most effective ways to reduce teenage pregnancies and HIV in young girls is actually to keep them in school. Research has actually shown that being in school is protective. So we're working closely with DBE through our school health, integrated school health program. Within the school health program, we have a task team that meets every month. And in that task team, it's co-chaired by Department of Health and Department of Basic Education, but the third member is Department of Social Development. So we look at the figures of what's the teenage pregnancy rate. And we're now coming up with a strategic plan to address those different drivers of whatever is happening in those different districts. So we're actually in the process of putting together a comprehensive plan specifically looking at teenage pregnancy. So that's not complete yet, but we have the data. We're using our HIS data to look at deliveries in facilities under 18 years, and then DBE also collects data on the number of teenage pregnancies they also have at primary school and high school. So we're using that as our database. the schoolhouse program, part of the package also is that the nurses have a face-to-face intervention with learners of those schools that they visit. And it's in the privacy of usually they give us library, and then there's this discussion on sexual and reproductive health, substance abuse, and non-communicable diseases. So there's a standard guide that the nurse uses, and then they answer questions, and it's a conversation that they have with the learner. And then those learners that need referral are actually referred to the nearest health facility. So if the learner was contraceptive, she'll be referred for that. They need condoms, they'll go out and get them. Now, what we have come up with as the task team is something called the School Governing Body Toolkit. Because DBE has informed us that before you can implement any sexual reproductive health services in a school, that is distribution of condoms, all supplying contraceptives, all doing HIV counseling and testing in school, you need the permission of the school governing body. So we came up with what we call a toolkit to help the principal introduce these concepts to the SDB and how the principal can then answer questions and engage. But that hasn't moved. So now what we want to do is actually to make it an opt-out approach so that it is done and then it's up to the SDB body to say, no, we don't want it, not the other way around, for them to be courageous enough to actually ask for it. So that's a new approach we're actually looking at. With schoolhouse services and ECD centers, now those schools that have got grade R, they are very easy to reach because the school health teams actually go to those schools. And when they go and they screen and assess grade 1, they'll do the grade R's as well at that school. They won't leave them out. The challenge is those ECD centers that are not linked to schools. So there, when the school health teams make their plans for the year, we get the map as to where those centers are from PSD, so that the school health team includes them in their planning, and they try and cover them during the school holidays. But they don't always, they're not able to reach all those ECD centers. So we work hand in hand with primary health care so that clinics can actually offer that as an outreach service. So it's from two angles that we try and cover those ECD centers that are not linked to children that are not in grade R yet. So that's where we work with that. I also wanted to answer a question on malnutrition. The indicator here we are measuring is the case fatality in admitted children. So those children who are actually admitted in the ward with malnutrition and they actually pass away. So we go back to when they come to what happens to them when they are still in the community. So they're our ward-based outreach team. As they assist households, they must assist the road to health. So that as soon as a child starts to grow, falter, before the child becomes a severe malnutrition, they must pick it up immediately and intervene. Make sure that household is actually receiving the social grant and the child is getting the care that he should be having. And then also at the primary health care clinic, when the child comes, we have to make sure that the child is actually weighed and that the weight is actually plotted. And then you watch the graph. Once the child again starts to grow fatter, we must intervene. We must have the supplements in the clinic, the food supplements for those children. And then referral to PSD should that child actually not be getting the social grant. Once in the hospital, the child, we have what we call the 10 steps for managing malnutrition, severe malnutrition in the ward. These children need that special attention. For instance, the ward that they are in, it's got to be uncomfortable for us. It's got to be hot because children become very, very cold easily. That can actually kill them. They must have their blood sugar tested. And we have these 10 steps very clearly outlined from what happens when a child is admitted to the primary discharge. Because even when a child goes back home, that child must be followed up and make sure that the curve, the growth curve, comes back to what it's supposed to be. And then one thing that is free, which can prevent malnutrition, is breastfeeding. So that's one thing we have to promote and we push. And again, we work very closely with our ward-based outreach teams. But also, I think in our communication strategies, that has to be very key. It's also a key message when it comes to Mom Connect. I think I've covered the questions that I was asked to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I mentioned that the infrastructure-related questions we'll take them up later. We'll start with the reduction of the budget to provinces by 1.4 billion and also the 8 projects that have been completed and some of the newer targets that are reflected in the plan and hospitals that have been revitalized and conducted. I'll ask Dr. Carter to respond to those and maybe starting with the CFO.
Actually, the issue of the 1.4 is actually a reduction in the baseline allocation. So there might be an increase in budget, but there was a baseline reduction. And since it's over the 3 years of the NTEF, the four direct grants were affected, which is infrastructure grant by about 420 million, the tertiary services grant by about 824, the training grant by 187, and the NHI by about 6. So if you put that together, it makes a 1.4 baseline reduction over the 3 years period. So the reason for it probably, we've been discussing this with Treasury, I think the entire fiscal pressure that has been experienced, I think, has sort of added to this. It means that the real growth on all these grants are actually, quite low. So we would have had growth, say, of 10% or even 11%, it's now more like 4.3% over the period. So that's the 1.4.
Okay, there were a few matters that I needed to respond to, and I'll come back to the infrastructure question just now. The first one was on the COs. Now, I think that we recognize that the Honourable Member would raise the question of the training of COs being quite critical to the quality that our services are provided by hospitals. The Department recognized that, and you'll remember, Chair, that in 2012, all the posts for COs were declared vacant. New CEOs were appointed with the requirement that they should have tertiary qualifications. So if you look at our CEOs in hospitals now, all of them have tertiary qualifications. But, and that's the point that the Honourable Member is that in spite of that, we still find massive failures. And we've done an analysis of the reasons why our CEOs still fail. Where are the gaps? And we have been working with the International Hospital Federation to develop a list of competencies. What are those key competencies that make sure that the CEO with the right qualifications also become successful? And a lot of those, that training does not happen at universities and colleges. And one of the strategies that we've agreed to implement is a question of coaching and mentoring. We have secured funding from the European Union, and we just started with that project. And we certainly are quite convinced, and this is an international experience, that once one works one-on-one through coaching and mentoring with CEOs, that the question of the quality and competencies of CEOs, which is then linked to a competency framework, which we also developed with the International Hospital Federation, together we would certainly have greater success in ensuring that our CEOs are sufficiently competent in delivering quality services within our institutions. So that has just started this financial year, and we are looking towards a different model of developing the competencies of CEOs going forward. The second issue that was raised was around nursing. Now, so we recognize, I think your comment about the delay in ensuring that we have the right training framework and that we implement it, and your question was why the delay, why we delay. So I'm going to try and respond to that. Firstly, the nursing strategy was adopted in 2012. When the nursing strategy was adopted, it recommended a number of different steps, one of which was the appointment of a chief nursing officer. It took us a while to get the right person to appoint as a chief nursing officer. That has not happened about a year ago. The second was the question of the training of nurses. Now, at the time, the decision was that the training of nurses should, there are two things. Firstly, the number of credits that you get in the training of a nurse was the equivalent of that of a degree. And that makes nursing training to fall within a particular band of training which is accepted by the Council for Higher Education and the South African Qualifications Authority. There was an assumption that to achieve that, our nursing colleges would need to move and fall under universities. When the chief nursing officer came, the chief nursing officer then engaged with, and this was during last year, engaged with the Council for Education, given the fact that our focus is on bedside training, and the college-based training is largely the kind of environment in which that happens, we in fact changed the model. We went back to the drawing board. We developed a new training framework for nurses, which we are now in the process of being ready to pilot. So within the next month, we will have a big launch of the new training framework that would ensure bedside training, the whole question of professionalism, and the whole question of moving towards a standard which complied with the South African qualifications framework. So once we've implemented that in the three pilot sites, I mean, last week we met with Gauteng, and we've agreed that they would be included. So in fact, while our APP, our strategic plan talks about, our APP talks about three pilot sites, we like four, because we agreed last week with Gauteng that they would be included. Now, it's a new way of training, and it's not really that new, because it's bringing back some of the principles of the oldness that we used to know. Instead of the, what is sometimes referred to as these, the epithet with the four stripes, they are also called the fruit salad training. We're going back to the old nurses that we used to know with the right attitude and all of that. So we're going to implement a pilot that in four provinces as opposed to the three which is in the APP by agreement with Gauteng. So that's the reason why there's been a delay. We recognize that we should implement it. In fact, in terms of our original decision in June this year, we were supposed to have moved to the new qualification framework. But we've had to change that with the recommendations that were given by our Chief Nursing Officer, and we're now ready to move, and it will be launched within the next month. The next one is the question of infrastructure. Now, we are, from now, going to continue to, firstly, deliver much better in terms of infrastructure, but secondly, also in terms of quality. And the reason for that is, what we have done up until now is to develop standards of the quality, the size, the configuration of all the facilities that we build, and the DGS signed off the standards to which all our infrastructure needs to comply. Secondly, we run the health facility audit, and we're also now taking the health facility audit, which has identified our poor health facilities. We've now appointed professional service providers to go to those facilities, having identified what's wrong, now to develop the implementation of that to the bill of quantity. In other words, to determine exactly how much of what you need to improve all of the facilities. And we have a panel of professional people, engineers, electrical engineers, mechanical engineers, and so on, that do that work for us to develop the work up to the level of bill of quantities. Then we have a panel of contractors that have been appointed. DTS assigned, we have service level agreement with 68 contractors. So we have 82 professional service providers and 68 contractors who have been specifically approved to be able to deliver the kind of infrastructure that we believe would comply with the kind of standards that we're talking about. But quite importantly, one of the things that we have done, given the nature and the state of our infrastructure, to in fact move away from a focus on new clinics and new hospitals to maintaining and improving the existing facilities. So our focus is quite extensively on the facility audit that was done and the assessments of our facilities that were done, and to continue to do infrastructure. We don't want to sit in the Department of Health with the same situation that Eskom finds itself in. So that's where we shifted focus, and we shifted the budget to address that as well. I think that's where I'll stop for now, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. The next responses will be by Ms. Hunter on the FSC report and the normative approach to planning for primary health care, the reprogramming by provinces, as well as the consultation that was supposed to have taken place regarding port health services. I think those are the main ones.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll start with the travel clinic. At the moment, they are just there. They only deal with issues around travel, around vaccination required when individuals travel between countries. And so the screening that they do is usually in relation to that, but also in case of global outbreaks, that they then screen for particular conditions related to outbreak, whether it's different strain of influenza or the recent Ebola that we've had. So we'll need to, the honorable member's unfortunate and regretted experience points to maybe, I cannot speak about expanding those clinics, because now those clinics are with national, because it's a national competency in terms of international health regulations, and this is why we had to nationalize all our services. But the rendering of primary health care services remains with provinces in a different context. So we'll have to investigate what would be required to then have fully fledged clinics, maybe at larger ports. But that will have to be an assessment exercise, and we'll then make recommendations through the DG to see if we can work with provinces to effect that. On the issue of port health and the fact that it's being transferred to the National Department of Health without consulting the FFC, I must say upfront that that is due to ignorance on my side. We have been working with the provinces, and we had meetings with the provinces that related to why the transfer, the precepts of the international health regulations. We had meetings regarding labor relations because it's, the transfer dealt with assets and people. And so we had meetings with formal labor in that regard about pure HR management issues and asset management issues. And then we had meetings with National Treasury and about the transfer of funds, and the Provincial Treasury Department were involved in this National Treasury meeting. And it's then only 6 weeks ago that I got a letter from Treasury saying that we should have actually consulted the FSC. The DG then wrote a letter, so there's a huge apology from outside because I simply did not know that we had to consult with the FSC, and so the transfers taken place, and we sent in a letter of information to the FSC, which I admit is the wrong way to go about it. Then on Dimitri check with DG. DG, you want me to respond to primary healthcare funding? Okay.
We might have approved to allocation and programming by provinces as part of the plans, how we do this.
Yes.
So the budgetary framework and the expenditure.
Yeah. So, DG, as you already explained, the bulk of primary healthcare resources must be with the districts, where the management of the services are implemented. So it doesn't mean that the national program for managing primary healthcare should have more resources, but resources for primary healthcare must actually be on district level. So with that, we're also working with Treasury at the moment. We're doing three kinds of costings which we're going to bring together. The first one is the actual costing of the primary healthcare packages. Now, this is a very involved process because to deliver mental health services at primary healthcare, as opposed to providing services for TB, as opposed to providing immunization services, are all different. So we have to cost the different types of services, oral health, what it costs, including HR pharmaceutical services for all the programs in program three, and they work out the norms for those packages of services as they relate to the programs, and then be able to say with confidence what the budget should be for the package of services provided at the clinics to the district. So that's one thing, it's the primary healthcare package. The second one is in the management by sub-districts and districts to manage primary healthcare services optimally. And the third one is the improvements that we're doing through the IU clinic. Because our clinics are in a dire state, and the improvements that we want to achieve through the IU clinic is going to cost resources. And so we're working with Treasury to bring all those three together to be able to say what the real funding for primary healthcare should be, and then how we will progress to set up those budgets as required.
Is on environmental health that the chair raised in the agreement with environmental affairs.
Was it on the hygiene?
No, the environmental health services, the norms and standards on waste management.
Okay, so environmental affairs have got regulations on management of environmental hygiene, but health at the same time as far as regulations on managing safety and hygiene within health facilities and environmental health waste is included there. So Chair, so we've got regulations. But I don't know if I'm responding to your question.
It was more digital, not on the well, on the waste in terms of health. It was, you said 52 districts are out of 52, 8 number of districts are adhering to norms and standards in terms of environment. And my response was then no, because majority of our municipalities are not in a good, the third example was in urban areas, it's okay, but when you go to the locations and whatever, they are in fact not even getting their therapy, and the impact of that to people in terms of health, and therefore, have you communicated with the department, with COPT, because municipalities, they fall under COPT, and they do have the directors that are in environment and health. It was in that context.
The DA and to the DD. Yes. There's actually an inter-ministerial committee chaired by Minister now of COPTA. And health is part of this, the Back to Basics project. And so this is one of the aspects that they're looking at, and health involvement in that, in the technical committee of that inter-ministerial committee is exactly about that. And so so there's the various departments, health, including environmental affairs, working together. And this process is led by COPTA. So from the health side, what we are busy with, and we're going to conclude it within the next 2 months, is a thorough assessment of the capacity of the municipalities to be able to answer to those norms and standards when it comes to the environment. And we're doing this jointly with COPTA, but also with environmental affairs, because for us, the major risk issues, besides the cleanliness of the environment where we're working with the environmental affairs, is food safety. And it's the rodent, the pest control issues. And so we're looking at the municipality's capacity so that we can make recommendations to bring the municipalities up to capacity to be able to live up to the norms and standards for a healthy South Africa care person.
The next and the last question I think would be about the AG and the data quality.
Thank you, Jefferson. The response that, or the work that we are doing currently is to look at a whole health information systemic overview to look at how do we address data quality. The first specific project that we are implementing is to rationalize the paper-based data collection tools. We found that in some of the primary healthcare facilities there were up to 65 different registers where data were collected from. So on one hand, it actually took some of the time that the professional nurse could spend with the patient, but on the other hand, it was open for a lot of human error. So we've rationalized that to 6 registers. That has been completed, and as from the 1st of April, this financial year, only 6 paper-based data collection tools will be used in all 3,500 plus primary health facilities in the country. Then we are moving into electronic data capturing. So basically then to remove completely the human errors that can come in with regards to the data collection. And then what we've done is we took the audit methodology of the auditor general and we designed a tool that the facility manager can use to actually assess the quality of their data. And it clearly then spells out where there are problems and they can immediately correct it. And then one of the key things that we are working towards is to have a detailed patient information system. But for that, we need quality broadband internet access to deal with all the problems. But we will see that the system will fully be rolled out within the next two and a half to 3 years. Thank you.
No, thank you. Honourable Mercedes.
No, thanks, and thanks for the responses. But you said one response then raises a fundamental question for me, the issue that Ms. Carter raised. The issue of our report, Parliament report. We, in October, when we're dealing with the annual report of the department, you will recall, sir, that made its way it arose. The issue of the consultation of the FSC. And it was part of our report that was tabled to Parliament. And my understanding is that when the report is tabled, therefore, it deposited the recommendations. Recommendations that were required to be implemented by the department. And my question, therefore, is if Ms. Carter is saying he was only sensitized by Treasurer 6 weeks ago, while in November we tabled a report and it was adopted by Parliament, I can't understand it. What exactly does it mean? Does it mean that we table those reports and then departments are doing nothing about them? Is that the implication? Because if really the department, after the report has been adopted, is able to go through the report and look at the recommendations of the committee and which becomes the resolution of the House, I mean, that matter should have been picked there in November. And then should not be a matter of 6 weeks being informed by Treasurer that we have had because he should have consulted FSC. Because we have said that. I'm not sure, sir. That's why you recall yesterday. I was saying maybe going forward, what you need to do when we deal with either annual report or budget. The first item will be get progress report on some of the resolutions that have taken from the fragment. But they just disappeared in the process. There's no system where the department comes back to us and say, this is how far, even some of the recommendations have got deadlines. Some of the deadlines have long passed. And we have not get any feedback from the department at all. And for me, it's a problem. For me, it's a problem too. Now, I don't know where the problem lies. I won't 100% say the problem lies in the department. Problem might also lie with us here. I don't know. Well, after the report is in table, what's the process that then gets followed? I know where I come from, where I was, that once the report gets tabled, the speaker then presents the reports back to the department concerned. And then the department concern is expected to look at the report the committee has tabled and adopted, and then understand what is that the committee said and what is the timeline and all those things and prepare accordingly. But the impression I'm getting is that no, that thing is not happening. And it's a very worrying factor. It means this just meeting, it's just a compliance exercise, a meet up today, so we just meet the next year. And still raise one and the same matters. Then they respond, it ends there, we'll come back again, becomes as a vicious cycle and all those matters. So for me, that's the problem. And then secondly, here, well, I didn't hear what Dr. Carter was saying about the infrastructure. The 235 versus what is on this APP, which talks about 8 mega projects and 70 other projects. I didn't hear what he was saying, really. I'd be lying to say I did understood what he was saying. And then, lastly, Dr. Lamin, I'm not sure, you're saying there is a post-NECAL communique. Because the impression I got from my constituents, that's what they told me, and those were nurses that they told me. But there's no system after that. It was not just communities. it was necessary that you tell me, you know, this, that mom connect ends on the delivery. Post, there's nothing. There's no system in this. That's what I'm not sure whether it will be in that clinic or in those clinics there, or maybe the things applicable in certain clinics not applicable to others, or you know, all those. Because that's what they raised it with me. And they said I must come and raise it here as I'm raising it.
I think just to, one, I think it's a process letter with two.
Sorry for that. E 1.4 reductions. I had an impression when Treasurer was saying this, some challenges financially is not going to affect service delivery. That's what they said. That's what the minister said. That regardless of the challenges of the fiscals, but the services, are not going to be affected. Which means key service deliverables are not home. There's no money that will be taken out. But I'm getting a different story now to say no, it's not like that. I don't understand it. Can you even read the speech of the Minister of Finance? It says that, it doesn't say no, this is going to affect service delivery.
Can we allow that? There are two areas that have been raised there. Now that the third one, the one of the infrastructure, the response from our world that we are coming from constituencies and we pick up that. So it is then the staff of the department that is raising that, and the issue of the service delivery being affected is then. So if you can respond on to those and then.
Let me start with the budget cut, and I'm going to be blunt, I apologize for that. Chair, you know, this is going and flowing between ourselves and Treasury, and it's probably something that requires minister level engagement. Because in some of the areas, there is an agreement amongst officials, and as to where we cut. Let me use an example. We have a funding for NGOs, and we have an audit report. We even appeared before SCOPA as to how NGOs are funded, which NGOs, and what their quantum is. There are certain NGOs where funding comes directly determined. It is already determined from Treasury. Even if we reduce it, they increase it to their level. Yes, we can show you evidence to that effect. And even with these cuts, and I would like to confirm that even with these cuts, I had said that we probably need to reprogram. And the CFO will tell you that every time I change something, junior officials will bring it to whatever level they want. And I use the example of the NHS, you know, in my previous presentation to say, where we say to Treasury, you can't. I mean, lab services are part of health services. You, it's not a service that you compromise. And our considered opinion is that this is how they should be funded. And junior officials will make, I mean, some of the emails here are really, really disturbing. You know, the and from very, very junior officials. And it's sort of an ongoing matter that the CFO and others have to deal with and manage. And I thought I needed to be blunt to say some of the things we respond diplomatically, but sometimes I think it's not been fair to the citizens. I'm not a diplomat, I'm an official, and I think sometimes we must just put things. And it's not the fault of the minister. The minister does what he has to do. But I'm talking about junior officials. Chair, sometimes I'm very harsh. I mean, I use very strong language that, you know, I'm not here to serve individuals. I'm here to deliver services and perform. And what they do undermines our performance and to a great extent. And I've written formally. I'm not reading things that I've not written in writing. I can share correspondence with you about complaining about the same things in writing. Meaning, what I'm saying here, I've said before in writing. I'm not just raising it with Parliament and share those letters.
The apologies to Honorable Matsazela. In fact, the reason why the response to that question wasn't heard because I actually missed responding to that particular question. So the question had two parts. The one part is very detailed, and I'm going to ask the guidance from the DG and yourself around us being able to provide you with a detailed report. I do have it with me, but give me guidance. So the two parts are, we have flagship projects, and what is the current status of those flagship projects? And the second is the other projects that we are talking about. Now, as far as the flagship projects are concerned, there were in fact five flagship projects that were approved. They were approved as PPPs, and it related to five of our central hospitals, and the mega projects. So when there was a detailed investigation done into the feasibility and the cost, and when Parliament, in fact, or Cabinet looked at the feasibility and the cost, not only with respect to PPPs in health, but PPPs in general. So there was, in fact, a decision to review the whole issue of PPPs. And because the funding model had not been agreed to, while we had concluded the feasibility study of the project, we had not proceeded beyond that because the funding model had not been agreed to. There was a meeting between the Minister of Finance, the Minister of Economic Development, and the Minister of Health in December to review those projects and then to decide how do we take it forward and do these projects that have been agreed to and have been announced, do they just sit in limbo or do we take it forward? There was a technical task team that was agreed to. The technical task team is chaired by Treasury, and we are now working at an alternative funding model. So of the five projects that were agreed to, there were three that were agreed. The five are still the projects that have been agreed to, but three were prioritized. The three projects that were prioritized were linked to new universities and King Edward Hospital. So those are Dr. George Bokhari Hospital, and we've just last week launched a new university. The second is Limpopo, with the new University of Limpopo, and the third being King Edward, because that one has been long outstanding. So there's still a lot of technical work to be done and a final decision to be made around the next step. But there's been agreement that those projects will continue. The other projects are quite extensive. So and the report, in fact, then clarifies at what stage are we with them. Are we at tender stage? Are we at physical completion stage? And all of this, and I've got the detail, and I can provide it to the committee, but it will take a bit of time to go through the details. We have a report on the stage of progress with the other infrastructure projects.
Sorry, does it mean if you want to? So that we...
Thank you. Honourable members, if I could please have the name of the clinic, so we can contact them, and then check that the training has been complete, and then we do follow up support. Thank you.
Yes. Yes. Just the other comments by Honourable Member Mashalela. The officials, when we come to Parliament and questions have been raised, but what we do, we take reports from the Hansard and look at what has been raised. I think one of the things that Ms. Fulmaran said always, and I follow up with her and Johannes, I actually literally harass them, is that it's always wise that we go back and prepare written responses. I don't know whether for all of these questions whether you've had the written responses, because it's the basis on which when we prepare our plan, we go back to the questions that have been raised before. The other point, Chair, historically we used to go through the FHC reports. This is why even this workshop that I was referring to is on the basis of the recommendations. I think if you look at the FFC reports over there, they've been consistent about primary health care allocations, and in some reports they also refer to the social determinant of health. And to be honest, it's something, even NHI, more recently, they've cautioned that... Yes, in the past it was informal, official meeting, but I've reduced it to writing, requesting meetings with the chair of the FSC.
No, thank you, TG. I think we will need that information, Dr. Carter, because now that we are going to be doing oversight, we are going to maybe to respond to some of the issues that have been raised. And it's all going to assist us when we are preparing our questions for ourselves in terms of asking. Dr. Lameni has responded, which is fine. What we will do, and which I think will advise, we must get on to the office of the DG. When we pick up issues in our areas, we must say, our advice members to submit it to the DG so that we get the response from the relevant office concerned. Around Dora, it was an audit that was commissioned between 1991 and 1993, which we believe is what really created a mayhem in the Department of Health. I'll get that. I'll give you and so that you see, because when we say the challenges of health are because of the system and the number of things, people must not at times criticize as if it has always been like it was correct, but we're coming from a past that now is affecting our present and it's also going to affect our future. And I want that report. I told them that I want that audit report, because when I will be speaking on issues of health, I don't want just to speak as if I think that happened in post-1994. They have been, and you know that health has been one of the victims of the system. Health education has been secured. We think that it has been quite, but first of all, well, we can't afford this load shedding. But we would have loved to be here beyond the time that we're having. But the unfortunate part is that we can't keep other people at ransom. I think a former treasury minister, I don't think that would be correct. But there are issues that are very fundamental that we think that you'll have to look into them. In the end, key to those is the response to us on the recommendations that we have put in our report. And I think that is going to be very important. So you must remember that we have got different experiences and we are coming from different levels. What he is raising, I was trying to check the science and technology do that, and maybe we took it as a norm, or the challenge was on us as members of parliament of not making that follow up, and therefore he's raising an issue that is we must begin to also have an introspection of ourselves. The second one, which I want to take serious, come back to us or through me, is that it's going to be impossible to restructure how we report. But I'll appreciate on a number of issues. They are key that I think we'll have to look into them so that they really assist in asking questions, but also assist us in really seeing that there is progress. That is, case in point is the issue of the nursing colleges. Please, if we can be exposed to that, but also be exposed to those launches. We do want to really. We will also need this information about how you wanted the staffing norms. Because as we speak, some of the institutions are in a very difficult situation, even clinics for that matter. So that we're able to challenge, so that we're able to ask provinces, but this you are told by the Department of Health, tell us why the situation is like that. And because that is then our responsibility. But thank you very much. We are... I'm not going to...
I think we might not miss the last part that the DJ spoke about with regards to NGOs. You know, I think what we need to say to the department chair is that they must finish us with those, the names of all those NGOs that are being funded, you know, the way they are funded. And so that, you know, when we do oversight, we can check exactly what's happening in those NGOs. I'd also say the last one that I thought maybe you are going to emphasize is the one of health education. That is important for health department to do health education. In fact, even with the one campaign that they've launched of washing of hands, I'm not sure, you know, why should they go and do strategy when this thing is simple? You just go to school and educate children the importance of washing hands and also the community. You know, health education is more important.
No, thank you for that. We will, and I hope that you have communication, education is very important. But the last part that I'm also going to reflect on, which I, as a chair, I'm really going to make a follow-up on, and I would appreciate if you can furnish my office with the correspondence to Tisha. Because I think it's about time. There must be a committee that really breaks this and really tries to understand. Because it's not the first time. This time you are more blunt. The other time when we were with the approbations, you were more diplomatic. Now you are blunt, and I think it's about time. But at the end, it is clement. And at the end, and I'm saying it here because it's not a secret. At the end, people outside are not interested in all this stuff. People are interested that the Afghanistan Commerce is not different. They are not there. The other things that are not interested, they are interested in treasury. They see that things are not being done. And in this year, where we are committing ourselves and going back to the Freedom Charter, and what is it in the Freedom Charter in terms of health, it is being set in. So, with the National Development Plan and the State of the Nation addressed by the President. We're not going to be apologetic, because it's not about us, I agree with you. It's not about you and ourselves, it's not about what we want, it's about what people want. So I would appreciate that if you can furnish my office with those, so that I then communicate with the relevant people and say, but what would we have in a situation like this? I do think that we have an enormous task, but we are sitting, I think I should have raised this when we open in closing, we are sitting here at a time when our country is faced with a serious challenge of xenophobia, and people are being attacked, people are being made, people are being are dying, and that, as the Department of Health, there is one of your staff that has been released to look into that. I think we must commit the Department of Health on that. But you must also furnish us with then the information so that as a portfolio committee on health, because at the end, the burden, all what is happening, it is right in the doorstep of the Department of Health in terms of providing services to those that are injured. And yeah. All right, honorable members, we've come to the end of our meeting. We said lunch must be brought in there because staff members had to leave. They have been released at 2 o'clock when they voted, but we're just being patient enough to see. I'm told that they've tried to warm that up. And the committee's agenda until we meet again. Thank you.